This episode of the Golden Bearcast is presented by Bet Online. And welcome back to another episode of the Golden Bearcast. We are back. It's the usual crew. I'm one of your co-hosts, Rob. I'm with my other co-host, Andy. We're recording this remotely. Both of us have a cough. I don't know what that means. But Andy, how are you doing in this new world order?
Both of us are dying, and that's
No. Let's not overreact. I think you're the one that's a lot more sick. I just have a cough, like a morning cough, which I've had for forever. But you, that's a different story. But yes, continue. How is life in the quarantine zone?
Oh, I hate it. I'm having such a hard problem with it. You took away my sports and my outdoor activities. This is a tough time in the Johnson household. Things are great because I am lucky to have my amazing partner, wife here, Diana. But boy, is this a challenge to stay inside. I am having a real hard time with it. This morning I woke up and I was like, we got to be close to the end. And then I read today, it was like, we're not even close to the end. It's like, okay, got to readjust that mindset one more time. So, how are you doing?
I'm as good as you can think of it. I mean, I saw this coming because, you know, of course, as you know and some other people know, like, I grew up in South Korea. I still have family in South Korea. And I saw what happened there, and I said, that's coming here, but it's going to be a lot worse here. Like, we're not prepping for this thing whatsoever. And then last Tuesday came around. With the Rudy Gobert stuff, and then literally we slept Tuesday night to the Rudy Gobert news, and then Wednesday morning the entire world had changed. Yeah. Like, I want to know because we didn't talk about this, but I wanted to know, like, what was your like timeline like between Tuesday and Wednesday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday ish of like the Rudy Gobert stuff basically was like the big trigger in terms of how things started getting handled here in the States. But for your, like, line of work and how that transition went from, like, Tuesday to, like, the end of the week.
Well, for me, it was particularly interesting because I had, like, the world's busiest schedule leading up into that point. So I was flying to Colorado and was in Vail at the Burton U.S. Open. And then I flew back a day early to go to an all-week-long conference in San Francisco. And people had started to drop out of the conference, but it still wasn't really like this big news story yet. And then we had the conference, and it was great. And then I flew to Phoenix and went to a music festival. This is like, what's the 19th? That was 10 days ago. I was at a music festival, and it feels like a year ago. So like, I get back from a music festival. I go in the office on Tuesday because one of our someone from Argentina was in town. And so I was like in the office on Tuesday, but we had already been told to work from home. So I mean, I was like all over the place. And then it was sort of like Wednesday was the real hit. I mean, the Rudy Gobert stuff, I was like, what an idiot, you know? So that's just my reaction. I was like, what an idiot, like, you know, not taking it seriously. But I don't even think, to be fair, like, I was taking it to the degree that maybe we should have been. So then Wednesday on, I've been sort of in this balance. Like, we didn't really know. We're like, can we go to spin class? We're trying to get outside, trying to go on hikes with our dog, you know, like trying to still remain balanced. And then I think since Sunday, it's been super locked down. So yeah, that's my timeline. I mean, it couldn't have been a busier time in my life to one of just like being at home. I think that transition has been tough.
Yeah, I mean, because you're such an outdoorsy guy and you need to be like doing things. So this is like the exact opposite of what you need. Or at the very least, you need to be watching sports, but there's none of that too. But
yeah.
So it's like, it's a weird place.
Double whammy.
Yeah. I think it has to go to note too that like from the two of us, like, we've been talking about this all week, we've been chatting about this and texting about this all week. Like, the first thing foremost is support your local like small businesses. I think that's like the place that gets hit the hardest in a time like this. Particularly even more so like any of the Asian restaurants that are in your area, I know have been hit hard. So please like go out and support. You don't have to go out, but a lot of places are doing takeout or orders, like phone-in orders or delivery. So, you know, try to utilize that to the best of your abilities, you know, during this time. And I think that kind of helps just diversify the food that you're eating at home a little bit. And, you know, maybe that helps give you a little bit of a hop in your step as you go around doing work around the house. But, you know.
Yeah. And we had a close friend of ours that opened up a brew pub in San Francisco, pop up, doing amazing. And then this hits and it's just so brutal. And I think they're still doing to-go orders at Doke Beer. So if anyone's in the city, you know, that is, you know, wants to support a good local business, that's one that's really close and personal to this, to both of us. So that would be great.
Yeah, I believe they're going to be on Uber Eats soon. So if you live in the city and you're an Uber Eats guy, make sure to make
or
sure
gal,
to,
or gal.
To use that. Order it. But I think we should, I think, you know, going off of that, like we'll talk about it for a little bit. Like, what do you think the, you know, the impact on this, on sports long term will be? Like, I've been thinking about this like for so long with how many sports are now in suspended. I guess I just wanted to get your thoughts on what you think, like this after effect of this current, you know, situation will be, you know, when we look at it 6 to 8 months from now.
Well, you know, I'm an optimist, so I think this is a one. It's interesting that the Olympics are still not canceled yet, not postponed.
Yeah.
I'm sure they will be, but I think this is an opportunity for the sports that are lagging behind right now, like the sports that are out of the spotlight when there is no spotlight, like the NHL and the MLB and the MLS, to think about different ways of doing things because you have all this time off. Like, no one was ever going to give you months on end to just do think strategy. How can we evolve our sport? How can we do things differently and make these changes now? Because there'll never, I mean, hopefully there's never a time again like this. So that's what I hope. And like, I would think the same thing for the NCAA. What better time to figure out the playoff than now, when you don't have all those other things going on? This is the time. Go figure it out. You'll never have this amount of time. So like, same thing with like paying the players, all that stuff. Dude, everyone's got the time to handle it. Like, I would just be massively on top of this time and all of those ideas and trying to think ahead. Because I think, you know, to some degree, you know, I don't know how much the league office is really doing. Like, I don't think anybody knows far enough ahead to like really plan. So like, they're going to be more reactionary to, I would be more reactionary to what's happening and use this time to be more proactive on what isn't. So that's what I hope happens. It's very optimistic. It probably won't happen at all, but that's what I would do.
In terms of collegiate sports, like, you saw the NCAA announce like the spring athletes will most likely get another year of eligibility. But like, you know, outside of football, like in terms of just college sports as a whole, like, do you have any things that you would want maybe adjusted or even like started considering like during this off season? I guess you did talk about it with like the finances and maybe playing the players, but were there any other things that you were thinking of?
You know, I haven't thought about it that much, but I would throw the question back to you.
I don't know. I think the one cool part about this, and you know, I didn't realize it until you just said it. But like, when are you ever going to get a time off like this? Like, when is every single sport not playing or practicing? Like, this is unheard of. Like, players, the all schools have like suspended practice and no games. So you have this time to basically sit down for at least the next 2-3 months to go over all of the rules, all of the postseason, like, you know, tournaments. Like, you can sit down and run through every single sport and revamp any rule changes, any postseason changes, any, like, practicing, like, restrictions. You can go through all of that. Do I think they'll go through it? No. But it seems like the perfect opportune time to go through it and maybe lift some of those old standing laws that don't apply to, you know, college sports as it is now, and maybe make some more restrictions on stuff that do affect college sports now. So, yeah, it's really interesting, and I'm very curious, and I'm considering doing a written piece on this, but for, of course, our new site, right, for California.com, hashtag shameless plug. But, like, just looking at this, starting writing a piece, like, maybe 6 to 10 months from now, like, looking back and seeing if this time, like, that we've had has impacted it either negatively or positively. Another article that, you know, some people asked me to look into was, like, what's the psychological, like, impact of this type of event on athletes with whose careers just ended abruptly?
Yeah.
Right? Like, the guys that are in, you know, spring sports that are seniors, I mean, maybe they'll get that extra year. But I think the big key on this right now is a lot of those basketball players that their season ends. This is probably the pinnacle of their, like, competitive athletic career. And they don't, you know, get a chance to compete in the NCAA tournament or, you know, or the NIT or any of those postseason tournaments. Or even, like, the Pac-12 tournament and so on. Like, we didn't even get to see the end of that, you know. And what's the psychological impact on it? Because... you know, if you have to forfeit your career due to injury, I think you could come to terms with that, right? But, like, something like this is, like, beyond your control. Like, way, way, way beyond your control. To the point that you... it's going to be super tough to come to terms that this is how my career ended. Like, I didn't get that one extra game to, like... I didn't get that, like, moment where I can look back and say, hey, I gave it my all. Like, because clearly you didn't get that moment to give it your all. Like, because the season just ended literally overnight. And I wonder what, like, how players, men's and women's, like, how they cope with that, right? How do athletes cope with the fact that you never got... the biggest, like, question I have is, like, Sabrina Ionescu. Like, she came back, and her whole reason for coming back was to win a national championship with Oregon, right? And... before you even got a chance to step onto the court to challenge for that, your collegiate career ended.
Yeah.
Like, how do you come to terms with that from an athlete standpoint? And it's so intriguing, like, to think about that a few months from now and how players came to terms with it.
Yeah, I think I don't know. I imagine it's really tough. Especially because, you know, like, the NCAA offering the additional years, like, I don't know. Once something like this happens and you have a chance to go into the next level, are you going to sit around and wait again? I doubt it. My guess is some players will be really good at coming to terms with it, and others will have a lot, you know, of a harder time. It's easier for me to sit here as a 31-year-old and apply a therapy type approach to it and say, you know, don't let your mind go there and look at all the positives. And maybe you didn't get injured and an injury was about to happen and now you get to rest and other good thing. You know, you're a college student, so your career, if you're not going into the next level, is really just starting. So you'll have other moments that'll be bigger than this one and will vastly surpass it, like getting married or having a kid or making friends or who knows, like whatever you want to do. But that's my old man approach. So, yeah, it's tough. I can't imagine. It's easy to be far away from it, but when you're going through it, it's got to be really challenging.
Yeah, and I guess to build off of that, I think the last point that I would want to kind of talk about with this pandemic and this situation is, like, just the bigger picture, right? like, what impact is this going to have on lives and, like, just us as human beings, like, beyond the sports in, you know, 8 months, 6 months, 8 months, a year time? Like, do you think anything's going to have changed, like, by the time, you know, March 2021 comes around? Or are we going to be sitting here talking about spring football 2021?
Dude, I have no idea. I was thinking about it today. I was like, are they going to start calling it BC, like before coronavirus? So, I don't know.
I think the coolest part about this, and let me give my sunshine pumping, like, optimistic version of this, is, I don't know, have you seen those videos of, like, Venice?
Mm-mm.
So, apparently, because of everything on lockdown, like, the waters of Venice have become clearer and cleaner. So, you know, you could see the fish in the water. Dolphins are coming back. Swans are coming back. Like, the air quality index of, like, the city of Los Angeles is, like, one of the lowest it's ever, or one of the, like, the nicest it's ever been. You could, like, see the, you can see the stars and stuff in China because they're not producing enough, or they're not, their carbon emissions has dropped significantly due to this. Like, it's crazy, like, seeing all those things. And, you know, like, let's say this lasts for, you know, 2 or 3 months. Like, I'm curious to know the environmental, like, studies done on this. Like, yeah, with a 2-3 month span of, like, all these things shutting down, like, less cars on the streets, less emissions, like, what that does for the environment in the long term. Like, this really feels like a reset moment for, like, the environment. And yeah, I'm curious to know, like, we did this for 3 months. Like, how did it impact us in the long term? And it, let's say we were to do this for a year. Like, what would the lasting impact on our environment and the world be? Like, it's very interesting. And it gives, I think, environmental scientists especially a lot of things to work with, like, moving in the future and how to, like, you know, give more basis to, you know, governments and people in general to be like, hey, like, we saw this, do good work over, you know, an X amount of months. Imagine if we did that over, you know, X amount of years.
It's the test you could never run.
Yeah.
So, like, in a sense, like, you could always say it, like, hey, let's try to shut down everything and see what happens. And people would be like, that's ridiculous. We could never do that. Well, now we're doing it. So, yeah, I think you just get this tremendous amount of data. And I have a feeling it's going to show that this is really positive for the environment, really negative for Andy's mental health, but very good for the environment. So I do hope that some of the learnings that come out of this are, they'll probably have a massive impact. I would hope. Yeah.
I guess that leads us to a pretty perfect time for a word from our sponsors.
All right, folks, right in line with our conversation. With currently no NBA, NHL, or college basketball, you might think there's nothing to bet on. Well, you'd be wrong. BetOnline still has hundreds of places to wager, from their online casino to poker and blackjack, all open 24 hours a day and all online. Sports aren't totally done. There's still mixed martial arts, which I didn't know was still happening, and esports, which I watch sometimes, is on the rise. If you're into entertainment, you can still bet on American Idol. Don't watch that. The elections, I don't know if they're going to happen. Spelling Bee, not sure if that's going to happen. Or Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest, which I'm quite positive that won't happen. But maybe it will. And if you want to bet on it, you can. So be sure to use your promo code BLUEWIRE to receive 50% of your welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, your new ticket to online action.
And with that, we're back to the next part of our podcast where we talk about the fun stuff. Football!
Yeah, everyone's going to be like, was this a Cal podcast or just Rob and Andy talking about life? You know, we've gotten loose with the scripts lately.
Yeah, I mean, bear with us. If you're listening to this, honestly, if you're listening to this, one, you're either bored out of your mind, or two, you know that we're not going to have much to talk about, and we're going to be like just wringing out every ounce of content that we can possibly talk about, and that means talking about life and random crap that Andy and I want to talk about. So you're stuck with us. I mean, I don't think there's any other way to say it. Like, you're stuck with me and Andy, and you know, if you're listening to this. So hope that gives you a little chuckle to know that we know that you're listening to this, because you're either running out of podcasts or this is the only podcast you listen to. So let's start with football recruiting. Man, holy crap. Like, you and I haven't potted in a while, but lordy, like, football recruiting has absolutely just taken off. And before we go into, like, the three main guys we want to talk about, like, from your perspective, because I've been at spring football, like, I've interacted with some of the coaches, especially the new ones, like, what were your thoughts, like, looking at just what they've been saying, how they've been recruiting, and just, like, your overall thoughts from being a third, like, person, like, out there?
What are my thoughts on the recruiting from just, like, how it's changed?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's night and day. But I feel like the big wins for Cal football right now are because of, it's like, so saying that it's Cal football right now that's having the impact is like, oh no, I can't go there. It's way too political. Anyways, it's all of the work that Wilcox and co did at the beginning of his tenure. So it's like when they came in the first place, you know, first thing Wilcox did after the presser was he immediately went out and visited like Monta Vista. Like that is now paying dividends. And the kid that we got from Monta Vista in this last class is I think he might have been a preferred walk-on or late, you know, maybe he did get a scholarship. Apparently a beast. And, like, having those relationships and winning those local battles, that's a difference. Because now guys that are all local are not just being like, well, is anyone else doing this? It's going to be like, as you saw with the last two commitments, they're like, oh, yeah, like, staying home is legit. I can be the hometown hero. Hometown hero sounds dope. I'm going to sign. Like, all of a sudden it becomes a movement, and Cal becomes that school. And it's a little bit of what SC was able to do in L.A., and a little bit of what we were able to do in sort of some of the glory days was these guys had a lot of pride about staying local rather than going abroad. It is classic Cal that this is happening now with coronavirus at our peak recruiting in the last 10 years. And we're getting hit with, like, this devastating virus. So that's very classic Cal.
Yeah, I think, you know, it comes in waves. And we've talked about this, right? Like, you know, when we were in college, like, we were the big program around the Bay Area. No one really talked about Stanford. And then, like, towards the end of our college years, Stanford, you know, started to go back up on the rise. And, you know, a guy named Andrew Luck came around and did his thing, and, you know, the rest is history. But now Stanford kind of feels like they're on the decline, right? And we're back on that upswing. So it's weird how it comes in, you know, it just comes in waves. And I think we're starting to slowly see I think we just got above, like, the equilibrium point. If that makes sense. Like, if it's on a pendulum or, like, on a wave, like on a roller coaster, like, we've just gotten above, like, sea level or that equilibrium point, and we're, like, starting to see that trajectory positive. Like, up till now, we were rebuilding up from the negative points and had just come out of, you know, the red. So we're at this point now where we're starting to see this. And, you know, I've said this a bunch of times, like, you know, people have asked, like, why hasn't our recruiting gotten better? It's twofold, right? Like, either you have outstanding recruiting coaches, which, I don't know, I wouldn't say that we have, like, you know, home run hitting recruiting coaches, but we have guys that develop, and we have guys that are real, like, people, right? They're not, like, trying to sell you this facade. They're not salesmen. Like, they're really trying to build this, like, personable, Like, this is a coach that cares about you, and, you know, if you're here for 4 years, like, we'll care for you all 4 years. Like, they're trying to build those people relationships, and I feel like they've built that now, and on top of that, we've started winning, which is the big aspect which I've talked about a bunch of times. Like, if you want really good recruits to come in and you want to get back on the radar of some of these big recruits, you got to start winning games. And clearly we did that this last season, and it's turned a lot of heads in the fashions that we've won it. So that coupled with, you know, Musgrave's name value and, you know, just what he's done in the NFL, like, NFL intrigue is so big for high school kids. Like, and you're starting to see that, like, offensively. And we'll dive into it. Like, four-star Maven Anderson, 6'1", 175 pounds, wide receiver from Mission Viejo, California. Jermaine Terry, 6'4", 235-pound tight end from Richmond, California. Akili Calhoun Jr., 6'4", 245-pound weak side defensive end from Brentwood, California. Like, those measurables, man. Like, yeah. That's insane. And, like, they're all four stars. Like, you look down the list at any of these guys and their measurables, right? So let me read you this, and you tell me if you're intrigued or not. Maven Anderson's pro comp, according to 247, is Davante Adams. Okay? That's his pro comp on 247 Sports. You want to guess? You want to guess who Jermaine Terry's pro comp is, according to 247?
Tony Gonzalez.
Tony Gonzalez? Sadly, no. It's actually David Njoku.
Oh, sick.
Who's an outstanding player in his own right and super, super athletically gifted.
Now, let me temper that excitement with one quick thing.
Okay.
Who was Zach Klein's pro comp?
Ooh. Let's see. What year was that? That was 2000 something.
10. 11?
Yeah, 10, 11. I'm going to say his comp was like a Russell Wilson.
I'll give you a clue. He was not in the NFL when he was the comp was no longer playing in the NFL.
Doug Flutie.
Yeah, closer. Chad Pennington.
Wow.
Yeah, Chad Pennington.
Wow.
And that is why none of these comps matter. Because, in the end, like, I want Jermaine Terry to be Jermaine Terry, you know? Like, I don't want him to be David Njoku. Like, go be yourself.
It's interesting, though. It's an interesting thing. And, like, it's just the type of guys that we're bringing in now, right? Like, Doesn't it make you salivate as a fan, like, imagining, like, a two tight end system, like, in, you know, in 2021 with DJ Rogers and Jermaine Terry, like, lined up at tight end, like, on each side, or, like, even power, like, two guys set up offset to the right or to the left. Like, what do you do with that type of, like, size and athleticism and ability to go after the ball? We're just gonna be thrown to the tight end left and right.
Yeah, and I think my favorite of all the, I mean, all that you mentioned is, everyone you mentioned is great, but I think, like, Akili being someone that could help us out with pass rush is just, like, that was awesome. I'm just so excited. I've, like, long wondered why we weren't crushing it with defensive recruiting, given how, you know, much fun our defense has been. And now, by the way, like, let me just walk one thing back really fast, because we say this all the time, that, like, Cal's recruiting hasn't been better. And it's like, it has been better. It has been. The only reason it doesn't look better is because of that superficial star thing. But when we think about the offers that are out there and the measurables and the players that we're getting, and then, as you said, the players in regards to, like, their aptitude and academic ability, they're all, these classes have been better. So there's that. But anyways, I've always wondered why we're not getting these 4 or 5-star guys on the D-line. I'm excited to see someone that can come in and influence the pass rush, whether it's DE, OLB, or someone that's going to be strictly playing, you know, on the D-line. That's sort of what I would, you know, want to see next, is, like, these Ndamukong Suh type of players that can come in and just completely disrupt an offense.
I think the cool thing, especially with Achille, like, I don't know if you've read the backstory, but like, there were rumors, and like, it's also always been said that Jermaine and Achille wanted to play together. And when Jermaine committed, like, there were conversations between the two of them, and I think that played a big role. And then, of course, the hashtag hometown hero thing, I think, played a big role.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I think the one thing that a lot of people don't realize is he has the size to play right away. And not only that, if he comes in after next season, the weak side or the defensive end spots are open. Like, Ziyande's gone. Luke Beckett's gone. Like, that leaves positions and snaps available for him to play right away. And I think playing at home, playing right away at the position that you're naturally gifted at, dude, he has a chance to be like a day one starter as a freshman, which is even crazier to think about.
Yeah. Yep. Gosh, I mean, amazing. Yeah.
These three guys, man. We have four recruits, and three of them are four-star guys. One, like, and two of them have some ridiculous offer lists. Like, just go look at Jermaine Terry's offer list. Like, it's just incredible that we beat out those types of schools and those types of recruiters at those schools. Absolutely, absolutely insane.
And now we just got to back it up in 2020.
Yep. Yeah. And that's what we're going to talk about now. Talk about some spring football.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to leave it to you. I'm going to leave it to you because
I get to ask the questions.
Because I'm the
now.
One that's been at spring football. You get to ask the questions. Yeah, yeah. Look at me. I am the captain now.
Yeah, I am the captain now.
I am the captain.
All right.
So I leave it to you.
Favorite beat reporter that you get to report on at spring practice? No. All right, let me ask. Let's see. Give me first. Who's going to be the backup quarterback?
Oof. See. Okay. So here's the thing. This is with the caveat. Only four practices.
Yeah. Okay. Of course. Yes.
With the caveat of it only being four practices. On top of the fact that Devon was hurt for at least one of those practices.
Okay.
So. But from what I saw during those four, Spencer Brash was the one that was leading the twos.
Ooh.
And he actually looked more confident with this offense now than he did with Bo Baldwin's offense. Granted, that's also because he's probably, you know, put a year and actually played some games this year. But he was throwing some incredible balls. Decision making, of course, was still, you know, underclassmen decision making. But man, he definitely has some natural arm talent, and you clearly can see that when you're playing in this type of West Coast offense. And you know, being able to just like focus in on like let's say a specific side and make like the 1-2 reads and then hit the safety valve, like. It's just so easy for younger guys to pick up, in my opinion, than asking them to do multiple reads across the entire field, and you're just making the game smaller for them. So he's definitely picked it up. But man, Jaden Casey though, like the dude is like an absolute just baller. Like that's just the only way I could describe it. He's just super good with the ball in his hands, on rollouts, on bootlegs. Like, just, I hate this comp, but it's the only one I can keep going to is that Russell Wilson comp of just, like, being able to keep his eyes downfield while moving with his feet. And, like, you know, he's not the fastest guy in the world, but he does those 1-2 things that just keeps him elusive just enough to keep the play open. And, man, he's got a rocket for an arm too. Like he just it reminds me of like Kaepernick when that story of Kaepernick and his wide receivers with the Niners of how they used to have two gloves on because he would throw the ball so hard. Like that's what I sometimes feel with Jaden Casey because when they were running like goal line plays, he would just dart it into his tight ends. just an absolute laser, and it sounded like it hurt, honestly, if you're trying to catch it with two hands. But, I mean, he needs to diversify, like, how he throws, but...
Yeah. I was going to say, just Cap did that to a fault. Yeah. So hopefully, hopefully he learns not to do that.
Kaepernick, and what's his name? Jeez, why am I blanking on him? The quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys, Dak Prescott. When Dak was at Mississippi State, like he had no touch on his passes. Right? It was just throw it as hard as I can, as fast as I can to the receiver I need to throw it to.
So. I know that everyone's going to want me to ask about Musgrave and the offense. However, I'm not going to do that. Ooh. I will do it next question. So we'll tease it. It's coming. You got to wait for it.
Curveball.
But out of all of the early enrollees, who is the one that stood out the most?
Trey Pastor. No question. So he's been actually playing with that new star position that Wilcox has talked about, which is the hybrid outside linebacker, strong safety, which is, if people remember Sua Cravens at USC, he was one of the dudes that did this. Troy Polamalu, of course, never got to play in the star position, but he pretty much played like that type of position. He's... Wow, like I didn't realize stature-wise, like how a bearing, overbearing presence he had. The dude's tall, like he's built. He just looks like the perfect, like, you know, over 6 foot, like strong safety type of body. And you're putting him in at this outside linebacker position, this hybrid outside linebacker position, and I mean, he has the athletic ability to do it. It's just a matter of can he get the mental reps in and can he, you know, make sure his decision-making is on point. I think the one thing that helps is you have a guy like Elijah Hicks quarterbacking as the other safety now who's been in this defense for 4 years. So you have that helping. But, I mean, the natural ability is just there. And, you know, he wasn't one of my guys, like, on my dark horse list. But after the... After the first two practices, he immediately shot up the board for me.
Huh. Very cool. And just so your DBs, you're looking at Cam, who got hurt, but is supposed to return for fall. So maybe meniscus tear. Then you have Elijah at safety. Mm-hmm. Who's going to be, you think, Pastor is going to start over like a Tattersall or...
Well, I don't think he'll start right away. I think he'll be one of the guys that plays that star position when they play those star, like any of the play calls that have the star position in it.
Okay.
I think you're starting two safeties. You're probably looking at Daniel Scott and Elijah Hicks. It's Daniel Scott slash Craig Woodson, in my opinion. And then you have your outside guys in Cam and Josh Drayden. And then Chigozie fitting in there somewhere. Maybe you put Drayden in at nickel, and you put Chigozie outside. But yeah, your cornerbacks and your safeties are kind of set. And I think Trey Pastor would be probably number one on that star linebacker role.
For sure. Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I forgot about Drayden. We still have Drayden. And then, yeah, Chigozie. Poor Chigozie. Like, Chigozie's so good. And he can't,
it's crazy how much depth we filled up.
Yeah, it's crazy. All right, so let's talk about the question. Oh, okay. Yep.
Well, I mean, let me say one more thing. I think the cool thing that this staff has built up, especially on the defensive side, is the ability to get guys to be patient with their playing time. Because, like, we've seen Chigozie do so well in spurts. And I'm thinking if you're a kid in that room and you see, like, this opportunity, like, you might get antsy because you want to play. And, like, you've tasted the field and you've tasted success that you know that you can be successful. Like, you might just feel the urge to, like, transfer to a place where they'll grant you the starting position. But on the defensive side, like, we haven't seen that much attrition, right? Like, guys have been patient and, like, working their way up into their playing time. And I clearly see that with Chigozie too. So like credit the staff to be able to like manage like all of those 18-year-old like, you know, minds of like, I can compete day one and I can play right away.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like that would be hard to, well, I mean, we'll see this year too, as especially as you start bringing in higher level, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Because we saw definitely an exodus with Stanford and all the players that left. Oh, yeah. But before we get down that rabbit hole, let's talk about the offense. So what have you seen from the Musgrave offense that excites you? And what seen from the offense that might concern you as you look towards 2020, fall 2020?
Okay, can I start with the concerns?
Yeah.
Okay, my concerns is that we don't have spring football. And what I mean by that is with a new offense like this, no matter how much the guys say, like, there's not much different, having a new coach at multiple positions across the offense, those coaches are going to want different things from you now. Like, they're going to demand different things from you. Like, the stuff that they're looking for to make this offense successful, the tendencies, the habits, are all going to be different. And especially from the offensive coordinator's perspective, you're going to want certain positions to be able to do certain things great. And if you don't have the guys on the field to be able to do that and, you know, push them in the reps to correct and to adjust and to break different habits and to start new ones, that's gonna keep this offense from, like, hitting the ground running come fall. And you're just taking away, you know, 6 months of on-field, like, hands-on learning, and turning that into film room studies and a lot of mental reps. And as much as that helps, like, you're just not in the moment of doing it. And, you know, you've probably done it too. Like, you've played tennis all those years. Like, as much as you watch tape or you, like, you know, get the mental reps in of, like, hitting the ball or hitting different type of spins coming at you, like, you don't really feel it until you're on the court and you get that muscle memory in. And that's going to suck if this continues and we don't get that spring training in. And that's where I see, like, a little bit of a detriment and a little bit of a handicap for us going into the 2020 season. But flip side is, man, the diversity of play calls and the things that I'm seeing different positions do that I've never seen them do is incredible. Like, I've asked this question a bunch of times when I've interviewed the guys. It's like, Mike Zafel talked about, he's super excited because he's doing things they've never done before, right? He's like, he's pulling as a center. When have you ever seen a center pull on a run play? Like, and he's saying, like, yeah, he's never done that before, and it's super fun. And then Chase, I asked Chase that same question, and he's like, yeah, he's an athletic guy, he can do it. But it's also weird, like, when your center is, like, you know, 12 yards downfield, like, pushing into safety and blocking upfield. And he said that's super weird to see from the backside. But he's, like, he's super excited for him. And so it's just little things like that. And, like, the diversity of play calls and, like, what they're doing, like, different concepts, like mesh. Oh, I'm such a big fan of mesh, especially in Madden. Oh, my God, it works to a charm. Like, just if you want to gain some easy yards, they're doing that with, like, from the slot receiver position, the tight end position, like, offsetting multiple tight ends. It looks like a power run, but then it ends up just being a play-action pass with three tight ends in the game. Like, you got 13 personnel, 21 personnel, 22 personnel, and you're running, like, a whole myriad of different things. It's super interesting, and it's like, very, very heavy West Coast NFL offense. And the crazier part is, it feels very much like what the Rams offense was running when they made that Super Bowl run. That's the comp I have in my mind. But it's so weird also because he's never run that type of offense before. You look at all the stops he's made before with the Vikings and Adrian Peterson, the Chip Kelly offense in Philadelphia, whatever John Gruden and Jack Del Rio ran in Oakland. It's just so drastically different from all of those that I honestly don't know, like, what his play calling style is going to be come game day. But at least from the play sets that they're developing, it's there's so many things that we're going to be able to do that, like, I don't see how our first opponent, which is UNLV, is going to be able to prep for this adequately.
Who is the player that thrives the most in this offense?
Chris Brown Jr. No question. Because you're giving a running back, a fullback in front of him, and multiple tight ends to block with pulling guards and centers and tackles. Like, you're creating running lanes for him. And all the running backs especially have thrived, especially during run plays. But, like, of course, Chris Brown Jr., who is going to be our lead back, especially has shined through this.
And so I know we're in March, and we don't even know if football is going to come back necessarily or when it will. But do you see this as being the year where we get back to the 1,000-yard rusher?
Oh, yeah. No question. I think at least from the first four games, they were focusing in on the run plays and getting the timing of, like, the blocks and the, how to explode the holes and everything properly. But they also ran a lot of play action. So that's what I mean when I feel like it's going to look a lot like the Rams offense, where it's very, very run heavy, and then we're going to hit them with the play action, and they're going to fall for it, and we're just going to have just open space to work with. And yeah, if Chris Brown can hit the ground running this season like he did last year, he's going to eclipse 1,000 yards easy.
So we have a new head coach, new coach at the running back position. In Aristotle Thompson. What were the early sort of, you know, feedback or impressions from him?
The first thing I'll say is he's probably the guy that's taken up the mantle from GA as probably one of the most personable guys on the staff. I mentioned this on the podcast with Nick, but like when we first got to talk to him and we were asking him about Zach Angelillo, he said, I can't remember what he said verbatim, but basically he was saying, like, yeah, you know, like, we've been trying to convince Zach to come to the light side. He's been in the dark for too long. But he's come to the light and he finally sees the offense and the light. And, you know, like, we're trying to wash away all the darkness from him. I just thought that was hilarious. He's just really, like, he's a talkative dude. He's very hands-on when he's coaching. I think the coolest part about his coaching was there was one point where they're running drills of, like, how to run, like, a button hook. Like, you run and just run the route. You step and turn, and he throws a tennis ball at the guys. And, like, that's what you have to catch. Doesn't throw a football. And it's very much like if you can catch a tennis ball, you can catch a football.
Dodge,
exactly.
If you dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And then I guess this is my last question. You know, of the new coaches that we've added to the staff, is there one that you're most excited about? Or maybe, let's say, instead of you, like, one that you think the players are most excited about?
I mean, I think it has to be Musgrave. I think the offensive guys definitely are going to love this because you're putting in a guy with years and years and years of NFL experience, right? That, you know, a lot of these guys, I mean, across the NCAA, like, their dream of after college is not to end their career but to play in the NFL, right? And defensively, we have a bunch of guys that can teach that to them. We have guys that played actually in the NFL, and they can direct them. But we didn't have that on the offensive side of the ball. And now you have an offensive coordinator who's been an offensive coordinator in the NFL for so long that he can start teaching these guys, like, this is what they're looking out for. And I think immediately your ear just leans to them, right? Like, you're immediately trusting of the words that are saying because of the years and the pedigree that he has and the understanding of the game that he has and the respect that he has in the NFL. And I think that's going to be absolutely cool to see. Like, the quarterbacks, like, we all remember that Derek Carr, you know, year that Musgrave had with the Raiders. He was a Pro Bowl quarterback that year, and arguably the Raiders' best year in the last, I'd say, 10 years. So that type of thing, like, is going to be intriguing for the quarterbacks, right? And then you look at, like, the tight ends and the tight ends he's had, and how much they've thrived. Like, yeah, you'd be exciting because he's gonna lean on the tight ends a lot in the passing game and in the run game. Like, they're going to be pretty big parts of this offense, and they're going to help this offense click. And we don't even have DJ Rogers on campus yet.
I think one of the big things, too, is, like, maybe just giving some confidence back to that side of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And really, like, giving them, you know, because the defense has been the main focus, probably won't, you know, be getting as much attention this fall. It'll be on the offense. And so it'll be nice to kind of give them some confidence going into this season.
I absolutely agree.
Well, great interview, Rob. Appreciate your time here on the Golden Bearcast.
I think this is a perfect time to transition into some fan questions. What do you think, Andy?
Sounds great.
All right. So we got one from Cal Canguila on Twitter. He says, what's the most exciting thing about the offense? I think we've talked about it quite a bit, but just to reiterate, it's just the play, like the play sets and the personnel, like the differing things that, excuse me, that they're asking people to do. It's just a breath of fresh air from just like a mundane spread offense, really. That next one from our friend Jojo Sungi on Twitter. Your best COVID-19 pantry mashup recipe for dinner. Example, peanut butter and cheese and spicy ramen. You got one, Andy?
Peanut butter and cheese and spicy ramen? All in one thing?
That's what it sounds like.
Wow.
Yeah. Do you have one? Do you have a pantry mashup that you've been using or is a secret recipe for us?
No. I don't have anything.
What?
Pantry mashup? I mean, yeah. I could just cop out and say I could make a nice chili. Well, you can't go wrong with a chili. My favorite thing to make, courtesy of learning this from you, Rob, is, especially with the throat stuff, is this bone broth soup. So I just have these bones chilling in my freezer at all times. And so anytime I sort of get any, I just feel like I need a soup, I'll just make it and make it with a water-based broth. And it's really clean, really delicious, and completely helps kind of rejuvenate my throat. So, but that doesn't count. That's cop out again. So I don't know. I have peanut butter and wheat thins. Like, that's my go-to.
Peanut butter and wheat thins?
Yeah, man. That's like my go-to late night snack. Go ahead.
All right. I got one that a lot of people might hate and disdain. But if you haven't tried it, you can't say anything. Cheez-Its and tangerines. Weirdly delicious. I don't know why.
Yeah, color match. Orange and orange.
Orange and orange. Colors match. And something about the flavors of like the tanginess and the sweetness of it with like the cheese and the saltiness of the Cheez-Its. Like something about it just works properly. Like I make myself like a little sandwich, like two Cheez-Its and like a piece of tangerine in the middle. Absolutely delicious. I'm telling you, if you have it on hand, I guarantee you should try it. Guaranteed.
That visual is hilarious.
That's great, though. All right. One more from Twitter before we move on to our Discord questions. Peter, our dear friend Peter. If 2019 Cal football offense and defense were cocktails, what would they be?
My favorite cocktail is a Mai Tai. So let's say that the offense is going to be a Mai Tai.
And the 2019 Cal football offense was a Mai Tai for you.
Oh, sorry. I thought we were going 2020. We're going 2019.
Well, he's saying 2019, but we can do both. We can do 2019 and 2020. So let's do 2019 first.
All right. 2019 cocktail for the offense is like a whiskey sour. I don't really like them, but I guess if you have really limited options, maybe I try it. the defense is like, I don't even know. The defense was the Mai Tai. Like, I really just can't go wrong type of cocktail.
It's true.
2020, it's true. Scrap 2020. I have no idea. I have no idea.
All right, we got one more question from Peter. It's,
what are yours?
Oh, you want me to do mine? All right. 2019 Cal football offense. I'm not going to say it's a cocktail. I'm just going to say it's a shot of soju. Just give it to me straight, man. Like, I just need it to work. Like, that's all I need it to do. I just need it to do what it needs to do, and a shot of soju will do just that. The defense, the 2019 defense, I'm going to say it's an old-fashioned. And I think the name speaks for itself. It's just an old-fashioned defense. Tackles hard, doesn't let the big play happen too often. Just classic hard-nosed defense.
Good ones.
Yeah. Well, Peter's got one more for us. He said, who's going to make a Garbers-level leap in 2020? So someone who has been underperforming and explodes into more than just relevance.
Yeah, got to go receiver, right? So, I don't know. Like, you could go Trevin Clark. Like, he was an underperformer, but, like, from where he was last year to exploding onto the scene. That's what I would expect. One of the receivers.
Yeah, I'd have to say it's probably one of the receivers too, or maybe one of the tight ends. I think it's one of the receivers. I think it's, since you said receivers, I'll say one of the tight ends. Just because we heard from Bo Baldwin that we were going to constantly use the tight ends. We'll use the tight ends. We'll use the tight ends, but we never got around to it. But I feel like we're going to use the tight ends quite often with this new offense. So that's that. Thanks for the questions. Let me dive into the Discord for a second here. Specslayer. I actually really like this question, and I think this is going to be like a good one to end on, but it'll be a little bit more of a discussion. So he says, I'd like to hear about what craziness happened during your guys' time at Cal. I've already had a big game postponed due to smoke, PG&E outages, and now coronavirus. So, during our times at Cal, so, I mean, I can start. You got one? You got one.
Go ahead.
I mean, my big one is the Tree Sitters my freshman year. That's just, it was like, it was such a culture shock, and it was just mind-blowing that people were living in trees, and they were like, they had like fences around them so people couldn't get in.
They're like throwing feces at you and stuff.
Yeah, throwing feces at you. Like, people would come and like throw food over the fence so like they had food to eat.
Maybe I made up the first thing. I thought that was true, but maybe it was a lie.
I've heard stories that people they got thrown feces at.
All right.
I don't think it's an urban myth. I think it actually happened.
I just remember when I was working with the team that they told me that Deshaun used to be lifting weights. This was before the new performance center, obviously. And he would be like lifting weights and yelling at them. They'd be yelling at each other. Oh boy!
What other ones? I think for me also one of the coolest things, like during that, especially that 07 season, like being in the student section, was I just remember how packed it was, and you had security guards that like didn't let you into the student section at all unless you had that wristband. Like, they were super strict on it, and we couldn't even secure student tickets because they would sell out. Like, they sold out our freshman year within like minutes or hours of it being available online. So we would buy extra tickets and like sneak into the student section. I paid $100 to get into the SC game. So yeah. And then I think the coolest part about the student section, that and the craziness, was, remember the body surfing? Like if you were just at the bottom, like you would just be if you were in the first two rows, like you would literally just be lifted up into the air, and you would body surf with your back to the people, and they would shift you all the way to the top of the section, and you would get off, and you'd have to walk all the way back down to your seat, and they would do that like every time we scored, and if you saw from the other angle or the TV angle, you would just see like three or four bodies just being like shifted all the way up to the top. Those are some just great memories.
Yeah, I did that once. It was not fun, but
once. Yeah, there were hands in places you didn't want it to be.
Yeah, once is all you need to do for that. But that was, I mean, it's crazy to think about how different that was. I remember that. I mean, you would just have no way of getting in the student section. And it was like an event when tickets would go on sale. Everybody knew about it.
Yeah.
But the I think the big thing that kind of happened in our time was tuition raised a lot. So when we started freshman year, it was pretty affordable, arguably too good of a deal. And by the time we ended, I think it had maybe doubled or more than, if not more than that. And so there were a lot of strikes, a lot of protests, a protest that I participated in, and a lot of my professors participated in, because of these tuition hikes. And then we would have, you know, this, I think this still happens, but like constant like fire alarms being pulled or protests in actual classes. So classes would get canceled or rescheduled because of that stuff. So that was pretty consistent, but that's, you know, part of the Berkeley lore. Like that is why you go to Cal. I think that's the beauty of it, is it's one of those amazing places where you can participate in those type of things. I would say what we're experiencing now is pretty unprecedented when it's being compared against something that happened in 1918 or whatever it is, 1917. I mean, the Spanish flu, like that's, so I'm sorry for this being your experience so far, because I think it's harder than the one that we went through and vastly different.
Yeah, I mean, what we went through is just like nice memories, right? Of like things that happened, or like, you know, some difficulties, you know, of like walking to class or whatnot. But this is like on a whole nother level of like not, some kids like not being able to walk graduation, right? Like this is, school has ended, like, you know, graduations are pseudo going to be virtual, which doesn't give you that joy of walking across the stage and shaking that hand and getting that picture taken. And, you know, you have a lot of, I mean, you and I both probably have a lot of memories from our senior year. And you pretty much, especially second semester senior year, and you just ripped that away from a lot of people. And not because, you know, they wanted to for fun, but it was a necessity at that point. So it just sucks, that, like that's the period on your time at Cal is this, and how this, like, you know, stopped everything. So we're sorry for you. We're if you're a Cal senior and you're listening to this, I don't know what words I could say that would make you guys feel better, but, you know, hopefully knowing that this is going to be a unique experience for you and your class alone versus the rest of us, I think you got to take some solace in that.
Yeah, and we're proud nonetheless. You have a great community, people around you. And a degree that'll last you a lifetime.
It's not the 5-year decision. You made the 50-year decision.
Yep.
But yeah, I think that's pretty much it. You have anything else to end on, Andy?
No, that's great.
No? Yeah, so that wraps it up for us. You can find me on Twitter at Rob11HWANG. You can find Andy at
Andy J Beast Mode.
You can find all our stuff on Twitter at Golden Bearcast. You can also tweet at us or look at all the links that are on that Twitter handle for our Facebook page or our Instagram, our Discord, our soon-to-be live studio for on Twitch. We wanted to do that starting this month, but you know, circumstances. Yeah, you can also find all our written stuff on writeforcalifornia.com. If you haven't signed up, please join. That is where all of us from California Golden Blogs is moving on to. So if you haven't heard, we're leaving. We're starting our own thing.
We left. It's over.
It's over. We've left. And so, yeah, that's it. Until next time, go Bears.
Go Bears.